The Guardian. If the anecdotes are to be believed, history is dotted with hugely successful people who slept very little. And even today, requiring minimal amounts of sleep is something that politicians and business leaders like to wear as a badge of honour. But how much sleep do we really need? And is that something that we're in control of? Today on Science Weekly, two people working at the frontier of what we know about sleep reveal new understandings coming from their work. Up first, I sat down with Guy Leschtzner. He's a consultant neurologist at Guy's and St Thomas's in London, and he specialises in sleep problems. Although scientists are still trying to unravel what exactly happens during sleep and why we need it, there are some fundamental things that we do know. I started off by asking Guy what these are.
We certainly think that sleep has a multitude of functions. So if we talk about very deep sleep or stage three sleep, we think that that is important for restoration of function, for regulation of the immune system. There is increased attention at the moment on a system of drainage channels called the glymphatic system in the brain. So these are very, very small channels that run between the neurons that are involved in draining extracellular fluid from the brain. And we think that during deep sleep, in stage three sleep, those channels expand by about 60%. What we think happens within those channels is that it removes toxins or metabolites, breakdown products of being awake, from the brain, acting as a sort of garbage chute system, disposal system. And if you disrupt your deep sleep and you somehow impair the function of this system, that may well result in the build-up of these toxins or metabolites to levels in which they are potentially damaging to the brain, which is where this idea that, for example, very deep sleep seems to be a protective mechanism against conditions like Alzheimer's disease. When we look at the protein that builds up in Alzheimer's disease, the levels of that in the brain can be impacted upon even by a single night's sleep deprivation.
So one thing that a lot of people will have heard of is that we need 8 hours sleep a day. And I just want to ask, as someone who works on the medicine and science of sleep, is that true?
Well, I think we know that roughly about 7 to 8 hours is the norm for individuals across the board. And if one looks at, for example, the mortality data that's associated with sleeping too short or sleeping too long, we know that the mortality rates increase significantly when you step outside the boundaries of about 6 to 9 hours. And if one looks at the consequences of sleeping a little bit less than 7 hours, certainly for many people, there appear to be negative consequences to doing that. So I think 7 to 8 hours is a reasonable figure, but what you have to remember is that we're all individuals, and it's the same as asking what's the normal height for a 10-year-old. If you look at a class photo of 10-year-olds, there's huge variation. And I think it's important to remember that not everybody sits within that 7 to 8 hour window.
What goes wrong when we don't get that sleep? I mean, we can all kind of think about feeling sleepy or finding it hard to get out of bed, but what do we know about the different things that go wrong when we don't get enough sleep?
Well, we know that sleep deprivation really has lots of consequences on our neurological health, on our psychological health, and also our physiology as well. So when we are sleep deprived, our vigilance deteriorates, our cognitive abilities, so our abilities to perform difficult tasks, decreases. But we also know that chronic sleep deprivation can have effects on mood, on levels of anxiety, on blood pressure, on how our bodies process glucose. So it causes something called impaired glucose tolerance and can also have some potential long-term impact. So when we look at the brain itself, we see changes in terms of certain chemicals within the brain that occur with sleep deprivation. There's also huge variation in terms of the consequences of limited sleep. So that there may be individuals who, when they are sleep deprived, don't feel particularly sleepy, are resistant to the effects of sleep deprivation in terms of the sleepiness that they experience. But it may be that that is independent of the impact of sleep deprivation on their health, or on features like, for example, cognitive impairment. So there are probably some people out there who, because of an underlying genetic basis, don't feel sleepy when they're sleep deprived, but may not be functioning properly from a cognitive perspective.
God, so I mean, you probably look at that person and think they're so lucky they hardly need any sleep. But then if you kind of drilled into it a bit more closely, things might be going wrong.
Absolutely. I think that in many ways, being very sleepy when you're sleep deprived is probably a protective mechanism because it gives you a very clear warning that you're not getting enough sleep for you.
So is what you're saying that on the day after a short night's sleep, for example, your ability to do maths calculations or remember in detail what happened the day before, that's kind of separate from how good or bad you feel?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, if you look at some of the data that was utilised to set pilots' flying hours, for example, we know that when you test people's cognitive performance, after you've been awake for somewhere in the region of about 18 to 20 hours, your ability to perform in certain tests of cognitive function declines to the equivalent of being over the drink driving limit. Now, if you can imagine that you're one of those individuals who's very resistant to sleep deprivation in terms of feeling sleepy, and you feel fine, but your cognitive ability is essentially the equivalent of having two pints of beer, then that's a really potentially hazardous situation to find yourself in.
And you're seeing people in your clinic who perhaps are outliers, who have problems with their sleep, who may be at the extreme ends of this spectrum.
Well, certainly we see a number of individuals who have been referred in because they're really profoundly excessively sleepy during the day. And diagnoses like, for example, narcolepsy or other central nervous system disorders have been raised as a possibility. But actually, for some of those individuals, what we find is that when they are given the opportunity to sleep a little bit longer, which is very easy to say in the clinic setting, but in real life, not all of us can have the opportunity to sleep 9 or 10 hours. But for those individuals, when they are given that opportunity, their sleepiness will actually resolve, which suggests that actually, rather than having any of these disorders, what they have is an underlying genetic predisposition for having a long sleep requirement, what we term genetically long sleepers. For example, one person that I saw recently was a man in his 20s who was sleeping between 7 and 7.5 hours every night, but despite that was often falling asleep in work meetings in particular, causing him a great deal of embarrassment, making people question his abilities at work. And he was actually referred in by his GP as having possible narcolepsy, which is this brain disorder which results in sudden sleep attacks during the day. Actually, it turned out that he just had a longer sleep requirement, and that when he extended his sleep opportunity to 9 hours, actually his sleepiness resolved. So it certainly implies that there are individuals out there who have a much longer sleep requirement than average.
And was this man worried about it?
Well, I think when you're told that you have a possible diagnosis of narcolepsy, obviously there's lots of things that go through your mind. This is a lifelong condition that requires treatment with medications for the rest of your life, with potentially devastating consequences. And, you know, in some respects, people come into the sleep clinic expecting a pill that's going to be the answer to their problems. But actually, when you're told you just need a bit more sleep than average, that in a way is a fantastic bit of news because it means you don't have an underlying major neurological disorder. But equally, it can be a bit deflating in that the answer to your problems is just to go away and sleep a little bit more.
That's it for part one. Coming up in part two is Professor Ingwe Fu, whose latest paper reveals new information about genes that can lead to people requiring only 4 or 5 hours sleep a night. Guy Leschner, who we heard from in the first half, spends much of his time with patients who need a lot of sleep. But we're now going to hear about a different group of people who can naturally get by on just a few hours of sleep each night. Professor Ingwe Fu first published research on these individuals a decade ago. And at that time, very little was known about the genetics of being a short sleeper, or even how common this trait actually was.
And we published the first paper in 2009. And to our surprise, after the paper was published, it was a big hit. It was written up in New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and a lot of big newspaper and also TV shows. And then all of a sudden, thousands of people emailed us. And so that's when we realized, oh, there are actually a lot of people are natural short sleepers, enough for us to really look into this short sleep phenotype. And that's really how my journey started. And so since 2009, we've collected many of these people and continue to look for genes and mutations that make people naturally sleep fewer hours. Once every year or two, we will do a large-scale sequencing project to look for mutations in these people. And this is one of the mutations that we found 5-6 years ago from a father and son pair family. The father sleeps 5 hours and the son sleeps 4 hours a night. And so we will do a very simple cell culture study to demonstrate that the mutant protein is different from the normal protein. And then when we see that, in fact, the mutant protein is different, then we go ahead and make a mouse model that carry exactly same mutation with the human. So when we get the mice that carry the same mutation, they show very similar to the human subjects that they sleep about 70 minutes shorter than normal mice, which suggests to us that this mutation caused a short sleep behavior trait in human and mice.
Once Ingwe had used these experiments in mice to single out the specific gene that was causing short sleeping, the next question was how such tiny changes to the genetic code were having such a profound effect on sleep.
There are two possibilities, at least two possibilities that we think could cause this. One is that these people and mice, they don't accumulate as much sleep pressure, so they can stay awake longer. So what happened to most of us is that when we wake up, we start to accumulate sleep pressure, and the pressure gets higher, 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 until it's so high that you have to go to bed in the evening. So one possibility for this people and mice is that they don't accumulate as much sleep pressure, so they can last longer. And when they sleep, the sleep pressure can release faster. And the other possibility is that they do accumulate sleep pressure just like the rest of us, but for some reason their body can tolerate higher sleep pressure than the rest of us. So we did look into that by looking at their sleep pressure and found that the mutant mice, and most likely the human subjects too, that they can tolerate higher sleep pressure than normal people and mice.
We've heard how Ingwe's initial research that made links between those who need very little sleep and genetic mutations resulted in publicity, followed by numerous messages from those who shared this experience and possibly the genetic mutation. Reading these messages, Ingwe started to become aware of another phenomenon that appeared to link these individuals.
Over the years, when a lot of these people would tell me their stories, and they're always very nice story, long email, and I really enjoy reading these emails. And oftentimes they would tell me story like, well, the short sleepers in my family, they have extremely unusual memory. One person told me that the short sleepers in the family, when they were going to school, they never needed to take notes because everything they hear, they never forget. So all they needed to do was go into the class and listen to whatever the teacher or professor said. And so that was very unusual. And so I thought, well, it sounds like a lot of these people have very good memory. So maybe we can use our mouse model to look at their memory. What we found was that normally, if we train the mice and then we sleep deprive them, and they will forget most of what they learned. And same way with human, if we learn something during the day, the first night of sleep is very important for our memory to form. So we found that normal mice, if we train them and sleep deprive them, they don't remember anything. But for our mutant mice, we train them and sleep deprive them, guess what? They remember just as well as if we didn't sleep deprive them, suggesting that their memory is more resistant to sleep deprivation or sleep loss. So that's another very interesting thing that we started to look into with this most recent paper, mutant mice.
With improved memory and the ability to just literally fit more into their days and nights, It might be tempting to think these people are blessed with some kind of superpower.
I don't want people to think that short sleepers are superior than regular sleepers. That's not what this is about. Short sleepers, their sleep is more efficient than the rest of us, right? Because whatever our body is doing during the 8 hours of sleep that help us to be healthy and feel good and maintain a good cognitive function, for them only take 4 to 6 hours, which means whatever our body is doing is more efficient for them. And the reason I feel it's important to understand this is that so that we can understand how sleep efficiency is regulated in our body. That way, if we understand that, then we can help everybody to sleep more efficiently. If we can help everybody to sleep more efficiently, then everybody will be happier, healthier, and smarter all the time. So that's really the reason why we feel very excited about this research. One size does not fit all in terms of sleep. And some people need 10 hours or 12 hours to feel good. And there's nothing wrong with that. Something about their body needs that. And some people need fewer than 8 hours. And everybody is different. It's really about how everybody should spend effort to try to figure out what's the best time to go to bed for them and what's the best time to get up and what's the best number of hours for them to get their good night's sleep. And I understand that there are many reasons to affect our sleep. People with sleep disorders, sleep problems, so it's hard for them. And that's why I think our research also can help them in the future, because if we can figure out how to increase sleep efficiency, we can potentially help people with sleep problems to increase their sleep efficiency with whatever amount of sleep they can get. The most important thing actually is for people to realize how important sleep is for their health. To me, it's more important than exercise and eating healthy food. And just think how much effort people spend to exercise or how much money they put into eating healthy food. And in fact, sleep is free. All you have to do is go to bed.
Many thanks this week to Ingwe Fu and Guy Leschner. We'll include a link to Dr. Fu's recent research and to Guy Leschner's book, The Nocturnal Brain, in the episode's description on the Guardian website.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.